recorded live.
How you guys doing? My name is Will. Welcome to another episode of Moto IQ Radio. Hey, you know, this is 2012, man, coming at you hot and heavy here. I hope to bring you guys some very, very cool interviews over the next couple of weeks, and I'll get into those a little bit later. Just so you guys know, if you want to email me, my email is will@motoiq.com. If you want to advertise on this show or sponsor this show in some way, shape, or form, definitely get with me and make sure you get put on to the right people. But today's show is actually something that I've been really geeking out on pretty heavily over the past couple of weeks, really ever since I had the guys from Dense Sport Garage on the show. And we got to talking a little bit and decided, you know what, we got to do a show just on Hill Climb alone. And here we are. We have Alex on. He's on the line right now. And we're going to have Bob on just a little bit later. He's a good friend of his, fellow competitor. And we're going to talk about the sport and why I really think you should add this to your 2012 list of events to go watch and or participate in. How you doing today, Alex?
Doing great, Will. Thanks again for having me.
No problems. No problems, man. We were just talking a little bit before we started recording here about the last show and you guys having a good time. And, you know, I think for me it's all about the car. And I think the car says a lot about the people behind it. And you guys have a very unique 240. But I didn't know you guys had a few other cars, and I didn't know about the hill climb that you guys were into. So let's start there. You know, can you tell us about the sport that is hill climb and sort of how it got all started?
Sure. I'm happy to. I hope I can do it justice because it's been happening for so long. And
right.
In the scheme of things, I'm a really new guy and a young guy, a young competitor. Mm-hmm. Hill climbing is really one of the very first forms of racing cars. And even in the United States, it started with really the beginning of the car. So in the late 1800s with Mount Washington, I think it was 1899 was the first Mount Washington event. Manufacturers from Europe sending cars over to compete. And I think that the whole notion that it's such an old sport, and
right. It's
something that has elements of just doing things on your own that make it sort of romantic and exciting. And there's so many good series in the U.S. that don't get much coverage.
Right.
Also, ones that do around the world, like in Europe, there's some really incredible series with high-profile cars.
Right.
The ones that Bill and my brother Nick and myself and like a lot of my friends compete in are down south in Pennsylvania and mostly New England here. They have a really strong series that takes place primarily in Vermont, but there are some older events that used to happen in New York and New Hampshire, but mostly in Vermont, and they just call it a New England series because the states are so close.
Interesting. I think I'm looking at the call in here. It looks like we have Bob on the line right now. Bob,
yes,
is that you?
Hi, thanks. I'm doing fine. How are you doing? Who's this, Will?
Yeah, this is Will, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Great to meet you. And hi, Alex.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Well, I was sleeping, and fortunately, something woke me up at 10 o'clock, and here I am.
Here you are. I wish I could wake up to this every day.
So, anyway, I'm joining late. I hope I haven't missed too much. But
No, nothing.
We just have to back up what you were talking about. Hill climbing is the best-kept secret in the automotive racing world.
Well,
we were just talking about the different series that we compete in, Bob. You can speak a lot more about the Pennsylvania series than I can.
Well, not only Pennsylvania, but I was lucky enough to compete in Europe back in the 60s, where it really was big-time racing compared to what it is here. And the factories all sent teams, and the events were well attended, though I must say the Pennsylvania events are well attended these days too, and the spectators are very enthusiastic.
Well, what is it? I mean, you know, hill climb is such a. I mean, for me, it's really about. It almost feels like, you know, rally, you know, but this is over a road, but this is specifically meant to climb a hill. And I'm sure that sort of dictates what type of cars show up. Bob, can you tell us about, you know, some of the cars that show up, and then tell us a little bit about your car, which is actually pretty sweet. And I posted a video in the post for this particular episode. So everybody go over to MotoIQ.com. And check out the cool video of Bob's car sort of leaving the line there. It's pretty wicked. But tell us about the car might compete in hill climb, and then tell us a little bit about your car.
Well, one of the nice things about hill climbing is the rules are very, very loose, and you're liable to see anything. And the extremes would be a stone stock VW Golf, and then an 11 or 1200 horsepower lowly IndyCar, and just about everything in between that you can think of. And depending on which series you go to, there's a different emphasis. In Vermont, where the hills are very steep and there's lots of turns, and the average speed is not quite as high as it is in Pennsylvania, the cars tend to be four-wheel drive because that gives them an advantage accelerating out of those tight turns. Whereas if you go to Pennsylvania, if you don't have wings and a lot of horsepower, you're just wasting your time.
Interesting.
Because there, the average speeds are high enough for aerodynamics to work. So with the wings or ground effects, you can plant the car and really get some speed out of it.
Interesting.
And I've campaigned quite a few different cars over the years. Back in Europe, I used to call my car the comic relief. I had a Corvette, a 1960 Corvette, and the Germans would laugh themselves silly when this thing went on the hill because it did everything but go fast. It sure made a lot of noise, and it covered from one side of the course to the other, and it really put on quite a show in terms of its dynamic instability. And then I got a small Lotus 11, and that really turned things around and started winning a lot of races and getting protested a lot by the Germans. And there's
really
no way they could check the cars other than what was obvious. And one of the things that I know I got disqualified on at One Hill Climb was because I had SU carburetors instead of Weber carburetors, which the car was homologated with. So they forced me to bolt on another 22 horsepower for the next race, which I think they regretted because. But that was one extreme. I've raced road cars here in the United States, and for many years I raced a 1959 Kellison, which is kind of a. It was the predecessor to the Cobra. It's an MGA chassis with a 500-horsepower Chevrolet engine. And it,
woof.
It was a lot like the Corvette. It had a mind of its own, but it was fun to drive as long as you stayed on the road with it.
Nice.
And now, today, I'm racing a Formula 5000 that's just a sweetheart and just a pleasure to drive whenever I get a chance to do that.
Well, that's it's an amazing car, and people are going to check out the videos that are being posted in the chat room right now. So, you know, I guess, you know, does hill climb tend to favor one particular type of vehicle over another, or does it really just sort of come down to driver skill and chassis setup?
Boy, they're both really important. You know, driver skill, because I would like to say that eventually, where you run the same course over and over again, year after year after year, the driver's skill becomes less and less important. But every once in a while, we have a guy like Alex show up and blow everybody into the weeds on his first run. You got a good driver to contend with. So he's gonna learn the hill in three runs, where I might require 3 years to learn the hill. Before I would be as fast as Alex, if we were driving comparable cars. So driver skill does count quite a bit, but in the end, it's the car that decides how fast you go. At least
right.
That's my opinion. If you want to win Giants to spare and you don't have a Lola with 1,200 horsepower, don't come.
Wow.
That's a
big power
course, Will. It's like very straight with one kink pretty much.
Yeah.
Really?
It's got one turn that's about 55 miles an hour, and after that, you just fly. And as an example, you go from 60 to 150 on the finish line stretch.
Woof.
So you come out of the last turn, at least I come out at 57 miles an hour, and I go across the finish line at 150 miles an hour.
I just posted a video, Bob, on the chat room of your in-car from that.
Yeah?
So people can check it out.
Oh, good. Yeah. It's an impressive video. You know,
you get a sense of the speed, for sure.
Yeah, for instance, a Bugatti Veyron SS, which is almost a $3 million car, accelerates from 60 to 130 in 7 seconds. This car does it in 6 seconds, going up a 22% grade, pushing that wing through the air. And actually, you're going around, as you know, Alex, you're going around a right-hand turn. Not much of a turn, but it's enough of a turn that you're thrown into the left side of the car when you go up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I hope to do that race this year. I know that I've been talking about it for a long time.
Yeah. To me, it's the race I really like because it takes me 43 seconds to make the run. That doesn't sound like much, but at the end of those 43 seconds, I'm exhausted. I'm shaking like a leaf. I can't talk. I can't breathe. It just takes everything I have to get up that hill in 43 seconds. Whereas I can go out and road race and run a half-hour race, and I'm not breathing hard or anything else. I'm just, it's really quite a difference from road racing because in road racing, you're only racing other cars, and hill climbing, you're racing yourself.
I find that to be harder, although I've never raced wheel-to-wheel, to be honest. I have raced in bicycle races and road races running, and I always found time trial formats to be the hardest.
Yes, I think so, because all you got to do in a road race is get past the guy in front of you, and he might not be very fast, whereas in hill climbing, you're trying to beat your last time as well as everybody else's time, and you have no idea where you are when you're making your run. So you just keep going harder and harder most people keep going harder and harder until they make a mistake.
For me, I know that I recognize when I make a mistake, and being alone, you know when you make that one mistake that you haven't had your best possible run. Whereas if you made a mistake amongst a group of people, it might not change your position at all, and you can regain it. But you'll never get a perfect run at something, even with a mistake. And I guess that is why people say, you're your own worst critic or whatever. But that's how I feel anyway.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And road racing, I don't want to take anything away from it because it requires a really different skill set to be good at it. Because what you find out in a road race, in order to pass somebody, you can't take the perfect line. Whereas in hill climbing, there's nobody to prevent us from taking the perfect line.
No one to blame.
Except that bump or that hole in the road or, the moisture that's on the road. And I find that most of the time, I'm not on the line at all. I'm just fighting my own battle to stay on the pavement wherever I end up. I know I'm trying to describe to people from the vintage groups that I race with on the track, and they say, what is it about hill climbing you like? I said, the violence. The violence? I said, it's me in that car, and it just gets so violent, you can't believe it. And I go to road race to relax. I don't see the red mist when I'm out there racing with other cars. But when I'm charging up a hill, that's all I can see is red mist.
I have to agree with you on that, Bob. I the anxiousness that I feel in the beginning at the start line is intense, and the pressure that I think that we probably both put on ourselves and every other competitor that we race with puts on themselves, no matter what kind of car they're racing, is heavy. So there's a lot of pressure.
It is, and there's a lot of peer pressure to go fast. You know, Vermont is nice because if you race with the guys from New England, you can go slow and nobody gets upset. But in Pennsylvania, you got to go fast, or they're going to be all over you.
Yeah, there's more. I felt that there's so much experience in both places, and I'm a new guy on the block compared to, you know, these guys racing since the 60s and earlier.
Yeah.
But there's more depth in Pennsylvania. People are fighting for fifth place, sixth place, seventh place, whatever.
Yes.
It falls off pretty hard after four places in Vermont. And I think that if we can promote like we're doing now and get some new people out there and sort of help them get started and lower those barriers to entry that they have, we'll get that depth that you guys have. You know, when you go, and we both have when we go to Pennsylvania.
Well, I really hope that everybody gets an opportunity to, you know, check out some of the videos that have been posted and, you know, go out there and look a little bit more. But Alex, I wanted to talk about, you know, your car, the Evo. We talked a little bit about it on the last time you were on the show, but I know you were doing a little bit of work on it. But tell us about the car and tell us about how it's prepped.
My car is a 1994 Lancer Evolution. It's an Evo 2 out of 10 so far.
Right.
And so it's an old car. It's a very simple car. It's lightweight. I've changed most of the running gear to, I guess, what people would call Gallant VR4 parts.
Really?
Yeah, like the motor, the short block is what people commonly call six-bolt block. And
okay.
There's some minor technical differences between the motors, but it's sort of an optimized hybrid of all the parts that Mitsubishi made for these cars. And the gearbox, it's got a dog box. It was originally used on a Group A Gallant VR4 type factory. And
right.
That sort of makes the car, because all the other stuff is easy to do, but having a good transmission with gear ratios that are optimized for the speeds that we do in hill climbs is really important. And that makes my car not a great track car because it doesn't have a very high top speed, but it's
right.
got five gears from 0 to like 130, and it can use all of it. It's got the power to use all of it. I don't have really good aerodynamics like Bob's car has.
Right.
I don't have the ultimate grip level that some of those aero cars have. But the car is getting, you know, I've had it since 2004. And every year it just gets better, gets faster and more reliable. And last year I was really happy with the car, finally, with the reliability. And we're just going to keep going in that direction, I think, this year.
Well, I'm sure there's no doubt some videos on that car, so if you get the opportunity, definitely throw a few of those in there. Let's talk about a little bit more about the cars. I mean, I guess, you know, like you said, you can show up there with a bone stock Golf, you know, all the way up to the Lola car, but I guess, you know, could somebody show up who, let's say, they typically run autocross? You know, would they be able to go up there, have a good time, and really feel like, you know, they're getting their money's worth versus, you know, going at autocrossing? I mean, I'm pretty sure there's no real comparison between the two, but I mean, would somebody go to autocrossing the vast majority of the year, show up for a hill climb, have a good time, and go home and enjoy and feel like they've enjoyed themselves?
I think absolutely. Autocross is great for, I think, one or two events, and I know I just offended a lot of people, but there's not much thrill and there's not much driving time.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to say that Bob probably agrees with that. I did one autocross this year to shake my car down, and I swear it was terrible. I'm also not good at autocross, so make of it what you will. But I think I drove for probably a minute, and I was there for 12 hours, and I drove like 40 miles an hour, and I can go drive around the block to do that. So I don't know. But to answer your question, I think someone that does autocross will have great car control, and they'll know the basics of how to go to an event and show up and register and
right. And
prepare the car and all these skills that teaches you, and they'll be able to come and have a wonderful time and learn a whole bunch of stuff and hopefully not be turned off by all of the people that do hill climbing like us that think we're cool. And
well, you know what my experience has been? Most autocrosses that show up with the proper safety equipment so that they can run a hill climb generally wreck their car the first time they hill climb, because they're used to going 10/10, and you don't ever go 10/10 at a hill climb because that's when you go off. Well, in an autocross, if you hit a cone, no big deal. In a hill climb, that cone is probably a big pine tree, and you're going to remember it for a long time. So,
right.
But having said that, our fastest hill climber is an autocrosser, George Boland, who won...
Yeah, he's got a lot of records.
He won the U.S. SECA National Championship 7 years, and now he just hill climbs. He occasionally does another autocross, but... he's an exception. For the most part, an autocrosser could show up and have a good time if he could practice restraint, but they don't. That's my
Interesting.
I think, Will, that another what you're alluding to is this difficult to show up and do an event? And
yes.
First up, and the answer is no. Anybody can come do this. Given the unique personalities of some of the people involved in the sport, I think it would be a good idea to do like a little introduction on the respective forums or whatever, and ask what should I bring, what time should I get there? Because some of the people have been doing this for 30 years, and you know, Bob and I, we're nice guys, but newcomers might not be accepted as easily. So,
really?
I get that with autocross also. When I did this one this year, this is the first one I'd done probably 12 years, and I felt like the new guy, and everybody's kind of looking at me like, who's this jerk? So it probably is with any crowd that it's a little difficult just to show up and make friends right away. But in terms of no matter what car you drive, you can come in. It'll be subject to whatever rules of whatever series you're involved with, but you can bring anything and be any level driver. And like Bob said, if you practice some restraint, you'll have a great time.
Interesting. I guess
the quickest way to make enemies at a hill climb is to show up, tell everybody how fast you are,
do
a couple of burnouts in the parking lot, and then proceed to wreck your car. You know, that just that just turns everybody off. And you
just holds everybody up.
How many people do that? And it prevents the rest of us from racing, because it takes time to clean up a wreck and take people to a hospital and all the stuff that goes with it. So that's why I say, if you show up and you show a little restraint and respect for the sport, you'll be amazed at how much help you'll get from the veterans.
Well, and I think I was going to say, I mean, it seems like to me, if like anything, I mean, if you're brand spanking new, you know, but you have like, say, you know, a road, like a time attack car, like, you know, DSG's 240. And if somebody just shows up and they're like, yeah, you know, I've been on road course, they start shooting off at the mouth, everybody's just going to sit back and say, okay, you know, enjoy yourself, and, you know, hopefully we don't see your car wrapped around a tree at turn five, you know? I mean, that's, you know, I mean, that's it. And hopefully the people that do show up that are at least curious won't make those mistakes, because that's wholly unfortunate. And I think the risks are far, far greater, when you're hill climbing, because, I mean, at least from the videos, there's not much runoff room, because the runoff is usually off big time. It's usually off big time.
I don't think anybody could show up having never done a particular course and win. Bob, correct me if I'm wrong. I've never seen it or heard of it.
Me
either. I think it would be really, really hard. I mean, we know that Higgins did it at Mount Washington this year, but he did like 200 practice runs, and he's also one of the best drivers in the country. And, so he knows how to approach an event. And he knows how to prepare. But
the one exception I would name is George Boland, because he'll go and do that. He'll do the 200 trips up the hill to learn it on his motorcycle or in his car. But he will, he goes out to British Columbia and he wins, and he went to Montana and set the hill record and did it again in Idaho, and he did it on his first run up the hill. But what people don't realize is all the recon that he put into it before he went up the hill. And, of course, his car is potentially so much faster than he has to drive it to win. That gives him quite a bit of room to work with.
Yeah.
In other words, if he sets a record in Iowa, 53 seconds on a hill, he probably could have gone up it in 45 seconds.
And he could probably drive 7 tenths or 5 tenths and beat everybody.
And George is only going to drive fast enough to set the record, and then he's going to go home.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whereas I think, other guys like myself, we just like to drive our cars. So you don't, just keep driving, and I'll use any excuse at all to get into my car and drive it.
Right.
I just like it once I'm inside that thing.
I think Bob's being a little modest also. He's quite fast.
Well, take your ego out the door. So, I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, I think, for me, it's mainly because of you, Alex. I got to say that, I mean, at first when I started looking at hill climbing, I was like, oh, that seems, something that if you are building a car to go, HPDEs or anything like that, and hill climbing seems like the perfect place to go have some fun. I mean, just go out there. Don't drive, way beyond your skill level, but just, take it like you would, any of your favorite backcountry roads that you're not necessarily familiar with, and you go out and have a good time. And, that's why it was really important for me to do this show, to really bring people into hill climbing and say, hey, you might want to look this on your list, because hill climbing might be the most fun you have throughout your season. And, I guess it's not that expensive. So let's talk about, the registration process or signing up. I mean, what could somebody look to spend to go hill climbing?
Well,
Bob or Alex?
Bob, you want to start?
Sure. I will agree with you, Will. Hill climbing is probably the cheapest bang for the buck there is in automobile racing, because you don't spend a lot of money. The entry fees are generally less than $150 for a weekend. You don't really tear your, unless you crash, you don't really put a lot of wear and tear on your car.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get used to it, like I've been doing this for a long time, so now I know how to build a car that'll last, and I can go through a whole season, and my total maintenance will be a set of spark plugs and nothing more than that. I don't even bother check the valves until the winter, because I know everything's going to be all right. And that's what's nice about a hill climb, is that they're of short duration. You never get going that fast that you're going to blow up your engine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just real easy on all the mechanical parts. So I can usually get by a week for a weekend race on $800, and that includes my entry, towing down, all the gas, meals, hotels, and whatever, drinking money. And that's pretty hard to beat, whereas I know most of the track events that I've done, I'll spend $800 getting into the event.
Wow.
And then
yeah, agreed.
Then everything adds up from there. Plus, you've worn out a set of tires, which is over $1,000. And, you know, it just goes on and on. From like a friend of mine who does road race, and he road races a Camaro. So he's in a, we have similar engines in that they're both Chevrolet small blocks. Well, he has
right.
to rebuild his after every three races. I rebuild mine, I don't know when. I've raced it 5 years without rebuilding it. I don't know when I'll rebuild it. He has to
wow.
replace his tires after every weekend. And that costs him about $1,400 just for tires. And unfortunately, because he's in road racing where you have long straights like a Watkins Glen, he tends to blow up a lot of engines, even though he knows what he's doing and he's been building good engines or having good engines built. It's just in the end, it costs a lot of money. I was talking with a friend of mine today about the cost of racing, and he's finally decided for road racing, he rents a ride. Let somebody else worry
mm-hmm.
about the expense, because it's just
right.
too expensive to build your own car and go road racing for what you get out of it, at least from his viewpoint. And he envies me because he knows what I get out of my car and how little I have to spend on it to keep racing it every weekend or every other weekend, as the case may be. And yet I can go to the occasional road race and do whatever I want there, too, as long as I'm willing to pay the price of admission.
Right.
And I don't know if I answered your question, Will. But
no, you did. I mean, it's...
Just to me, it's so much easier to get into it. The thing that turns most people off is when they find out you got to put a roll cage or a roll bar into the car, and they say, well, why do I have to do that? And in New England, you don't. In Pennsylvania, you do.
That's yeah, they have a little bit more of a strict rule set.
Yeah, and what they're trying to do is keep you alive.
Right.
Imagine
now,
that.
Now, I mean, as far as tech goes, I mean, is, you know, the necessity for, you know, a roll hoop based on potential speed of the car, or is it just because you go off on a corner, it's, you know, guaranteed rollover plus trees?
Yeah, well, the fickle part about any kind of crash is 30 miles an hour is enough velocity to give you a basal skull fracture. So,
right.
Now, that covers an awful lot of crashes. Alex can tell you, I walked away from a 110-mile-an-hour crash at Weatherly where, you know, some part of my car broke and the car went off into the woods at 110 miles an hour, and I walked away from it without any injury whatsoever. But I was damn
right.
lucky. I mean,
yeah,
I had a good car, but I was
strong
also
car.
Very, very lucky. Whereas I've seen other people go off at the same speed in the same manner and spend 7 months in the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, it's just you don't want to wreck it at a hill climb, not unless you don't know how else to have fun.
Will,
wow.
the roll cage or no roll cage issue is one of the oldest
yeah.
battles in
exactly.
New England. And without, like, getting into the politics of the whole thing, there have been some incredibly fast drivers that have never run with a roll cage. And I believe it was in about 99 or so, maybe a little after that. I might be wrong. Bob could correct me. But somewhere in that area that they started this new rule, or slowly introducing a new rule set that would allow the first timer or encourage someone without a roll cage, without a prepared car, to come to a hill climb and see if they like it or not before taking the plunge and essentially transforming their car into a racing car. And the way they do this is they give you a time which is called a breakout time, and they say if you come in under this preset time that we've determined to be a fast time, then you get a win.
Right.
If you do it twice, you're done for the day, et cetera, et cetera. There's ramifications for doing it a number of times, and ultimately you can't
use your car at that particular hill ever again until you get a roll cage. Now, if this makes sense or not, I don't know, because I feel like as a first-time driver, you're very likely to crash. And then I also feel like who cares who's got a cage and who doesn't. Like, I'll have a cage in my car. If someone wants to run without one, it's not my problem. So there's a lot of arguments here about it.
Well,
in Pennsylvania, none.
I was wondering, I mean, is it mainly due to, like, everybody has to run a cage? Like, if you got, like, a bone stock, okay, boom, you got to run a cage? Or is it just, like, you know, is it more depending upon your speed or potential for speed? And what is the cage based on?
Well,
or is it just flat out everybody needs to have one?
That's a good question. And the answer is sort of unclear because people like to discuss the potential of certain cars when they're arguing that everybody should have a cage,
right.
But the rule stands for everybody. So
okay.
The way it stands in New England is that if you want to try hill climbing, come up. You're going to have one of the best times of your life, but you'll probably want to have a cage in your car, and you'll probably be inclined to put one in after doing it because you'll be like, this is really fun. I want to keep doing it. I want to be safe. If you go to Pennsylvania, you should show up with a prepared car or maybe go down with your unprepared car and just watch and see if it's something you might be interested in. But the rules are, I won't say more strict, but they're different and they're more traditional. You know, it's a car race, so bring a racing car.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I think that was well put. And, you know, if you're going to go to Pennsylvania, you need to have the car prepared. There's no two ways about it. Whereas in Vermont, they'll let anybody come and try. As long as they don't go faster than the breakout time, they're okay. But as I more said, and I will say to anybody who'll listen to me, you can develop enough G's around your neck at 30 miles an hour to get a basal skull fracture. And so that doesn't mean you have to have a cage, because a cage would only intensify the shock. But you got to be prepared for things like that, and that's a good harness, good helmet, a harness device if you're so inclined. There's all kinds of ways to protect yourself, and I'd like to think that my car is 200 pounds heavier than a similar car would be for road racing, and that is because of all the armament I've built into it because I don't want to get hurt. I'm a coward.
Wow.
That allows you to drive faster. Also, Bob, it allows you to be more confident in your equipment.
That's the inverse rule with the cage. You put a cage.
Right.
I've got a car that I can bolt the cage into or take the cage out for vintage racing. When I take the cage out, I'm a lot carefuler than I am when I put the cage in. Because I feel more invincible with that cage in there.
Wow. I mean, I guess I never really considered, because, I mean, I guess I wondered if, you know, I got a Honda Fit. And I was like, you know, I'll just show up and have a good time and, you know, maybe go up the hill once and, you know, call it a day. But, you know, the way you guys are talking, you know, it's not necessarily unsafe, but there's lots of opportunities for things to happen that you weren't prepared for. And I guess hill climb is a much more serious motorsport than I had originally thought, because I just considered, you know, I don't want to call it like Sunday driving, but, you know, if somebody had, you know, if somebody had like a Audi S4, you know, pretty powerful, all-wheel drive, great car, you know, are they going to show up and run in hill climb and whatnot? Whereas they might be going through the HPDEs or autocrossing in it, you know, to come do hill climb, like you said, you know, bring a prepared car, and a prepared car requires a cage. So I wonder if that particular person, you know, would sort of, besides the breakout requirement, would be sort of excluded from running in the hill climb in a car that actually performed pretty well.
It's hard to think about the progression in auto sport from doing autocross and HDPE
time trial, road racing.
Right.
Where does hill climb fit in? It's not really on a scale. It's not
interesting.
So the hill climbing is probably one of the most viable ways to compete for a short amount of money. If you at a HDPE, you don't get timed. You're not racing
right.
anybody. You can go
right.
to time trials with NASA, but bring your wallet. You
right.
know, bring all the tires that Bob was talking about before. Red
right.
line time attack. You know, we've all done that, and World Time Attack. Now these cars, the winning cars are $150,000 more.
Easy. Yeah.
You know, and they're backed by budgets that are huge, and so if you're the kind of person that wants to compete and you have sort of a smaller budget or I mean, for someone who is unable to race cars, then
right.
Hill climbing fits in there for the person who wants to compete and they want to take their skills to the furthest level that they possibly can. But, you know, I could never road race all the way, you know, I couldn't afford to do that. But I feel like hill climb is a small enough sport that I could do just about all the events I'd ever want to do.
Huh. Interesting.
So that's how I fit it in. That's how I sort of, it's not so much on a scale of, I do autocross, I get some skills from that, and then I want to go do HDPE, then I'm ready for a hill climb. It's, you sort of want to compete in different ways, and it teaches you different skills. And it's just a different experience, like Bob was saying earlier. It's you know, you get some things from road racing, and I feel that way about doing time trials at the track, but you don't get the rush that you do hill climbing at all. It's not even close for me.
Interesting. And Bob, I'm sure you can probably comment on this. Have you come across people who are coming from other motorsports disciplines to try out hill climbing, and then they wind up never going back? Or if they do, it's rarely, or it's a paid gig. But they sort of, they get the bug of hill climbing and they never leave.
Well, my favorite guy is the guy that drove a 1933 Buick IndyCar up Mount Washington. That's a hill climb on the Auto Toll Road.
Okay.
And a 1933 Buick IndyCar with about 375 horsepower. This thing is a beast. He drove
okay.
it up. He was an Englishman who was hired to drive the car. He flew in. He'd never hill climbed before. Drove the car up the hill and refused to drive it back down the hill.
Really?
Yes. He just thought, we're all nuts, out of our minds.
Nice.
Another friend who road races a Corvette, and he road raced it for years, and he came to a hill climb. And he said the same thing. You're all out of your bloody minds. And he never came back. Because, as I say, if I had to pick one word to describe what we're doing, it's violence. You know, you just explode up that course. Because that's it. Now, the
wow.
neat thing about what we do is we don't crash into each other. We don't block one another. It makes for much closer friendships. I don't know if you've ever been to road races, well, where you know, people want to punch the guy in the next pit out because he blocked them going into turn three.
I've seen some videos.
Yeah,
I've seen some videos.
I can remember when I first started racing because I was fairly good sized. I was very popular because I could be depended upon to handle myself when it came to the fights that we knew were sure to come.
Wow. Wow.
So this is a vast improvement over back then.
I got to tell you, like, you know, and it's, again, you know, and I tell everybody, like, you know, this is something that's really new to me. I mean, I've seen videos on YouTube and everything else, and I thought it was crazy sexy, and it looked like tons of fun. But I got to, you know, listening to you guys talk about it, like, it's even more fascinating. Now, what would you say? I mean, would you consider this a pretty decent spectator sport?
In Pennsylvania, yeah. But not in Vermont, unfortunately.
Good, I think a good clarification there, Alex. The Pennsylvania, the courses are such that you can see an awful lot of what's going on. Vermont, the roads just disappear into the woods almost instantaneously, and you can't see anything.
It's a great way to test a relationship with a new woman. Just take her to a hill, climb, see if she's around at the end of the weekend, because you won't see her till the end of the weekend.
How many days are the events covered for? Is it usually like a Saturday, Sunday, Friday, Saturday? What's it usually?
Get there Friday if you can.
Okay.
Race Saturday, Sunday.
Okay. Now, is this sort of like a camp out deal? People camp out?
A lot of the time, yeah. That makes it a lot of fun. Barbecue.
For families, particularly in Vermont, because they can come and camp and bring the whole family and not spend a lot of money.
Fascinating.
And, I know my grandkids, I've got three grandchildren, they've been coming to almost every race for years, and they never seem to get bored. They love it. But that's in Pennsylvania. They came to Vermont, and they were very upset because they couldn't see what was going on, and they saw a lot of smoke and stuff like that and didn't know whether somebody had crashed or not.
Hmm.
Whereas in Pennsylvania, it was pretty obvious what was going on. I want to go back to something that you said, Will, and I think, if people could take it away from this conversation, it would do them a lot more good, and that was if you approach a new hill climb as you would approach a strange back road and drive it the same way, you'll do just fine. And
nice.
That's exactly the way I would like to think I look at these things when I go to a new course and try to learn it, and would recommend to anybody else as to how they should do it.
Well,
because to me, driver attitude is everything. It's much more important than the safety equipment. My safety equipment came in handy when something mechanically broke, but I've never had a crash other than, when something breaks. So I tend to drive very cautiously compared to some people. And, again, it depends on your skill level. I do all right, but I would never try to pass myself off as having a lot of skill. I've just been around long enough to know how to do it right. And I have good equipment.
Well, I was gonna ask about are there any other forms of motorsports that somebody, like for example, Time Attack, Alex, you guys bring out the DSG 240. I've seen a few videos of that car making its round the hill. Do you see any other motorsport that or series that maybe a car or two might be able to come over and have a good time and sort of play around in the field of hill climb and I guess eventually decide that everybody's too crazy and go home?
Well, it's got to be a good driver car combo, I think. And
right,
there's probably plenty of them in that kind of person that has a well-developed road racing car should really consider doing the Pennsylvania events.
Okay.
They're really different in that the roads are nice and smooth, and some of the PA guys are probably rolling their eyes right now, but if they came to Vermont, they would see that the roads are unbelievably bumpy, like insanely bumpy on certain stretches of the hill. Like, so much so that it's like hitting a speed bump in some places at full speed.
In way of backing up, Alex, there's only one Vermont hill that I can run with my car. The rest is just too bumpy. And I bottom out and hit things just going up the street.
So the winning guy is going to have a well-developed racing car that is not a good road racing car. It's going to have a lot of wheel travel and a lot of ground clearance and really specialized for this course. But Okemo is pretty smooth still. And, there's always repaving going on. Certain courses sort of get rejuvenated
And I don't want to detract from the series, but the roads are bumpy. A street car is great. Street suspension is probably one of the best if you have good tires. But down in Pennsylvania, you can get all these cars like Formula cars that are low and have good aero, and they can actually use it. And there's such an incredible breadth of models that win. With Jeremy, who we tried to have on the show tonight, has an Evo. He has an Evo 8, and he does very well for himself in that.
Mm-hmm.
He did well at Climb to the Clouds. And then Bob does very well with a older Formula car, and these are totally different types of vehicles. And you know, certain guys have. There's a car in Pennsylvania that has, I think, 2 snowmobile engines, maybe 4. I don't even remember. But it's crazy looking, you know, all these different creations, and they can all do well if they suit the driver, and they're predictable. I think that's a big part of keeping a car
for a while. All right. Well, you kind of dropped a verbal atomic bomb right there. 4 snowmobile motors. I mean, are we talking like, one to draw air out in each car to get more? Are they powering the car? I mean, what are we talking about?
I've got a photo of it. All I see is belts and pulleys. That's all I can tell you. I don't know how it works.
It's believe it or not, a guy named Ted Klaus built it. He's 83 years old now, I think.
Okay.
And he's still driving, by the way. And John Hartnett owns it. It has 2 3-cylinder snowmobile engines in it. Develops about 400 horsepower, and it weighs 700 pounds soaking wet. Sometimes, when he gets everything in sync, it is unbelievably fast. But most of the time, it is just a crazy car to watch go because it's never going to go where he wants it to.
That's kind of nutty.
The guy that won this race at Duryea in Pennsylvania that Bob and I were both at last year.
Right.
This guy Merlin, he has a Sunbeam Tiger, which is this sort of innocuous looking two-wheel drive convertible English contraption, except it's got a V8, some crazy motor in it. Bob might know more. It's a big block.
Yeah.
And the thing was spinning the tires the entire way up the hill, and he just drove it like a madman. And so anything can win. Any drivetrain configuration, it's like a totally up to how well the car is sorted out and how good the driver is, I think.
That was a point I wanted to make. In Pennsylvania, you never know who's going to win. And we generally have different people winning every time there's a hill climb. Whereas in Vermont, the same guy usually wins and the same people come in the top 3.
Yeah, that's very
at,
true.
At every hill, and it gets to be a little boring, whereas in Pennsylvania, you can go and say, well, I wonder who's going to win this week, because you really can't tell.
Interesting.
There was a guy.
And that's because there's so many cars that are right on the limit in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And it just depends on who's feeling good that day and who's running well.
Interesting.
Who's going to win, because, like Alex said, I think, you know, Jeremy Dietzel is very fast. He's blindingly fast in his Evo 8, and you never know what he's going to do. He's going so much faster than he's got any business going in that car. And, you know, if he's on, he's liable to win outright in a 4-door sedan that he drove to the race.
Yeah, and he drives it to the race, which is unique.
Really?
Yeah.
The height of being brash, I found that ever since I started using a trailer, I never wrecked my car. But when I didn't have a trailer, I destroyed it every time. One blew it up mostly.
Wow.
So I got a trailer then, because I didn't need it. You know, go to a race without a trailer and you should have a problem.
There's a guy, Dan Rutan, who raced for years, and he's from a family with a long racing lineage, a lot of good drivers from his family. He had a his whole family would make these VW based hill climbing vehicles and race all over
right.
the place. But he stopped racing, and I guess the word was he stopped a lot because he was so much faster than everybody else that there was no, in Vermont, this is, there was no competition. And his records still stand. And I honestly, I look at some of his times at the hills we run, and I cannot figure out how he's done it. Like, it's so far, where everybody is so far off his times. And I'd like to say the pavement is, like, deteriorating or something.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I want to know. But so his car, he sold his car, and it, some guy from Lebanon bought it, and he shipped it over there.
That's interesting. You know, it's like, you know, when you hear about records like that, and, you know, if they've been standing for long enough, that technology has gone, you know, to the point where it's like, you know, right now everybody will say, well, you know, pics or videos or it didn't happen. But for something that's, you know, tried and true and tested over time, you know, especially something that's as serious as this and has proper scorekeeping and everything else. But I can almost, I mean, for me, as soon as you said it's faster than anything you've ever seen and the times are just so unbelievable, well, my answer is like, well, where's the video tape? And let's run the video and let's see what we're really looking at here. But I'm sure there was no GoPros, no contour cameras, no replays running at that time. But I mean, is there video of this car running?
Yeah, I have like a short clip of a start, and then there is some good in car at a few of the hills, and you can tell
right.
it's fast. I mean, it's even with a bad video, it's really fast.
Interesting. Well, I guess because one of the things for me that I've been thinking about a lot is, you know, what other people would I like to see run? Specifically, what other cars would I like to see run in this? And a few of them are time attack cars, a few of them are road course cars, but they have, you know, amazing drivers. But I always think about taking, you know, the sport compact scene that I love so much and trying to get them to get into other motorsports as a way to spread goodwill of the sport compact scene across lots of different motorsports. And I think hill climb is one of the ones where everybody would have a great time. I mean, you know, the professional awesome Evo, love to see Rayos, you know, Scion TC, which probably has way too much horsepower. Well, I don't know if you can have way too much horsepower, but I mean, two wheels, front wheels, trying to drive, you know, 1,100, 1,200 horsepower easy up a hill would be amazing to see. And I would love to see him run Pikes Peak, but, you know, between those two and you got the Integra Type R from Sport Car Motion over on the West Coast. There's a few fast cars on the East Coast, but there's a couple of guys on the East Coast that love to drive, and they're a bunch of drifters. They actually just dropped a really cool drifting video, but I wonder how those guys who are really comfortable with transitions between left and right, and they don't really have too many qualms with, you know, dinging up their cars, whether or not they would go out and have a good time in the hill climb. To me, it seems like perfect, you know?
No, they'd love it. I think they'd love it. Look at who's doing on a high-profile event like Pikes Peak. You get a lot of cars like the ones we're talking about, you know, that are sedan-based cars,
right.
production-based cars. You get experimental cars also, but
right.
sort of the time for manufacturers to show what they've got. And we don't get too much of that on the East Coast. Hopefully, if Climb to the Clouds comes back, that's the Mount Washington Hill Climb, if that comes back for a few years in a row, we might see some more participation from manufacturers. But any of these cars can do well. And probably a lot of the drivers that do the time attack stuff and the track stuff, but I feel like the rally drivers would do the best.
Right.
Everybody, because they're generally a more experienced group, and
right.
they're used to driving on roads like that and under
right.
conditions like that. And track driving is very controlled. And very predictable. You do one lap and you know the course.
I wonder how I wonder if Tanner Faust has ever done any hill climbing. That guy seems like he can jump into anything and go fast. I wonder if he's ever considered it.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd do great. I mean, all those guys are professional drivers, and you know, being a good driver works everywhere, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Good rally driver, good on the track, good drifting. He's got good car control. Any of those guys could do well. Any of his peers, I'm sure.
Well, I have one final question to both of you, and Bob, you can start here before we close out. What was the initial thing that brought you to hill climbing?
The thought of being able to drive a high-powered car on a normal street as fast as I wanted to drive it just was an overpowering temptation. Driving on a racetrack is so, and I'm using a term I just made up, saccharinized compared to driving on a public road the same way.
Right.
You just can't compare the two. And I had, I was in Europe, I did some autocrossing, and I certainly enjoyed that. But when the chance came to hill climb, and I didn't even know there was such a thing until I tried it, I couldn't believe it, and I was hooked right after my first hill climb, as badly as I did.
What car did you use, Bob?
Well, I initially used a Corvette, and as I said, I seem to be the comic relief in between the series.
Those are your first ones.
Yeah. And then once I got this Lotus 11, and became a serious contender, it really became cutthroat, but I had a good time.
Nice.
And again, the beauty of hill climbing is your mechanical skills are called on as much as your driving skills. So it's a sport for hot rodding as much as it is for people who just want to drive. If you just want to drive, you can still get into hill climbing and have a lot of fun. But if you want to build your own car and try out mechanical ideas, which I do. I mean, I'm driving a car that would pass tech inspection in 1968 at any Formula 5000 race, because if you look at it, you can't see the difference between it and what it really is. And yet, it's competing with brand new cars today, even though it's 43 years old. And that's where the technology challenge came in. How do I make this thing fast without changing the way it looks? And yet other people build a car that they just want it to go as fast as possible. And there are no rules to stop you in most of the classes. You know, unless you're racing in a stock class, then you've got to play by the rules. But once you get into the special classes, it's run what you brung. There's no other sport where you can do that.
Wow. Wow. Very amazing. What about you, Alex?
It's really similar to what Bob said. I wish I had something really creative to say, but I had a all-wheel drive Mitsubishi turbo car, and I wanted to basically just run it as fast as I could somewhere. And I wasn't really experienced in knowing anything really about car racing, but I had done some autocrosses in cars I had owned before that, and I was sort of done with that, and I went up to Vermont and stayed with my buddy Mike, and I told him I was doing a hill climb, and really neither of us knew what that was at the time. And I did it's Philo, Bob, Philo Hill Climb, which is just right by Burlington, Vermont.
Is that your first one?
That was my first one.
Oh,
it's a really short.
You are brave.
It's a short, tight course. A lot of people crash. I had a great time. And,
oh, my God.
I raced once,
and I never went back.
Well, if I start with the worst, then it just nothing seems as risky after that, I guess.
Yeah. There's only one worse, and that's Hershey in Pennsylvania.
I've never done that one.
Yeah, well, don't. Autocross in the Pine Woods.
So So there's videos of Philo online if anybody wants to see the course. It's pretty tight, and the road is extremely narrow. So that was the start for me. And like Bob was saying, if you run in a prepared class, it's one of the few types of motorsport that you don't have to have any restriction if you class your car correctly.
Right.
You can have as much power as you want. I mean, I know Time Attack is like that now, but with Time Attack, you can't have as much power as you want because it always costs more and more money to compete with the other teams. But with Hill Climb, you can't really use, if you have a 500 horsepower car at the track, a decent driver can probably use it. But at a Hill Climb, you can't use it unless you have the experience on a particular course or whatever. So there's an element of experience that keeps things competitive that you can't get by spending more money and more money. So that eventually became a factor for me. But at first it was just that I wanted to run my car and see what it had pretty much. Now that was how it all started.
Well, I hope that over the course that everybody's listened to this particular episode, that everybody's gotten a feel for the sex appeal that it is hill climbing. I know I've been bitten, but I'm hoping to make it out to an event or two this season. You know, hopefully funding willing, I'll be able to make it out there. And I got a tent, so I guess there's really no excuse.
You better make it out.
Yeah, I'm going to try to, boss. What it comes down to is time off from work and time away from the family. We'll have to figure out something. But, you know, between, you know, Formula Drift this year, GTA this year, you know, adding one more event would be totally nice. And especially PA, since it doesn't seem to be that far away. But I invite the listeners, you know, to definitely find your local hill climb club and you know, definitely go out and check it out this season. And then get back to me. Send me an email, will@motoiq.com, and let me know what you guys find. And, you know, I think we'll definitely visit this a little bit later on, maybe halfway through the year, and you guys can tell me how the season's going. I'd love to have both of you guys back on.
Oh, that'd be great.
Sure.
Look forward to it.
Bob, I greatly appreciate your time, and I'm sure everybody is, really happy with you coming on the show and sharing your stories. Alex, same to you, too.
Yeah, anytime, Will.
Very much so. And I really appreciate it. So everybody has been climbing. If you guys have any more questions, Alex, can you give out a few websites that people can go to get more information on hill climbing and where they might be able to find a local group near them?
Yeah, absolutely. The New England Hill Climb Series is a really easy one. It's just hillclimb.org. Pennsylvania Hill Climb is pahillclimb.net.
Okay. pahillclimb.net. Okay.
Yeah. And then what else, Bob? It should, like, Climb to the Clouds is a good one.
Yeah. And there's VSCCA. They run usually a couple hill climbs a year.
And this is one of my favorites. I need to give a little bit of a shout out to my friends Wolfgang Meringer and Walter Kropf in Austria. They do a website called Hill Climb Fans with a group of people, and you can go to hillclimbfans.com and check out some serious high level machinery that we don't really get over here, but hopefully.
Yeah, definitely do so. Definitely do so. Alex has been steadily feeding me with lots of videos from there. But, you know, worst case scenario is everybody go check out YouTube, type in Hill Climb. There's going to be no shortage of information. Definitely check out the videos that I have attached to this particular post for MotoIQ on MotoIQ.com for this particular show. Man, what can I say, guys? I greatly appreciate you guys coming on the show.
Thank you, Will. Thanks a lot. It was good catching up with you, Bob.
Good talking with you. Good night now.
Good night, guys. Well, everybody. This has been another episode of MotoIQ Radio. Just a few things I wanted to touch on before we close out here. There's a really cool article on a Cusco counterfeit oil catch can on MotoIQ.com. Everybody go check that out. Very interesting article. There's some counterfeit stuff out there, and MotoIQ likes to put those things out there and put them on blast and show you what to look for, because when you go buy that Cusco oil catch can from eBay, you know, you might wind up with a very fake part. And the release of the Bloodmasters video, if you guys are big fans of Bloodmasters, Drift Alliance, Tony Angelo, Chris Forsberg, and a bunch of those guys over there, Scott Angerman, they just released their video yesterday. A great video, tons of fun, you know, straight hooliganism at its finest. I want to shout out Kyle Mohan for last week's episode. So if you're a Rotary fan, definitely go check out last week's episode. It was tons of fun. We got pretty deep. And I want to shout out Def Motion. Big shout out to you guys. You guys have been in the chat room, you know, the past couple of weeks here, and I greatly appreciate you guys checking us out and spreading the love. And as I close out here, if you want to contact me, definitely hit me up, will@motoiq.com, the Twitter account, MotoIQ Radio. You know, get with me. I'm working on a few things. Next week, we're going to have a performance tech. Days will be back on. And just so you guys know, we will have Ken Gucci on the show next week. So we'll get to hear about Ken Gucci, his story. We're going to hear about the new Gretti Scion FT86. Going to be dope. And just so you know, boom. Got another one for you. Tony Angelo is going to be on the show as well. It's going to be epic. Tony Angelo is going to be on the show. He's going to talk about the car that he's going to be driving for the 2012 season in Formula Drift. So everybody stay tuned for that. It's going to be, yes, that is next week. It's going to be serious. You want to be in the chat room for this. It's going on big time. Next week, Ken Gucci, FT86, Tony Angelo. I don't know what car he's going to be driving. There are some rumors. You guys can go check them out and see what you find. But no doubt, definitely be here in the chat room next week. No doubt, I'm probably going to have Justin Banner back a little bit. We will see. The week after that, we're going to have Rob Cordona, Cousin Rob from World Electronics, World Racing, Chris Rado's Time Attack team. And I want to give a few shout-outs here. Densport Garage, Deft Motion, Bloodmasters, Female Racing News, Studio Road, Viper Performance, Global Time Attack. Just so you know, Global Time Attack runs a bi-weekly, every other week webcast. Go to globaltimeattack.com. Check it out. It's going to be pretty dope. It's going to be fun. They do it at 4:20 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Definitely go check them out. Be in the chat room. I'm going to do my best to be there. Be there. So with all that, everybody, this has been another episode of MotoIQ Radio. You want to advertise on this podcast, and I think that would be totally awesome, because that might mean I might get a little bit of extra funds, which makes me going to events a lot easier. You know, definitely get with me, will@motoiq.com, or chat with Martin Gonzalez. He was on the show last week as well. It's M. Gonzalez, MGONZALES, @motoiq.com. Hit me up, man. Let's see what we can do. And everybody, I greatly appreciate everybody that's in the chat room right now, everybody that's ever shared this show. I need more love on this. I need to get the word out there. So if anybody's looking for it on iTunes, it will be under Will's CarCast. I'm going to work on getting a MotoIQ feed just for iTunes. But tell people, go to iTunes, look for Will's CarCast. All the shows are there. Go to willscarcast.podomatic.com. You can get all the episodes there. And MotoIQ.com. Yeah, all the episodes are there. TalkQ.com/TC/112511 has all the past episodes. It has them kind of broken down. Some of the episodes are broken down into segments. But long story short, Big shout out to everybody that's in the chat room. Austin, Drew, Alex, Rose, Bob, thanks for coming on the show. Wes, what's up? There's lots of guests in here, but you know, I appreciate every single one of you for checking out the show. And hey, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Much love and respect. OtoIQ Radio, signing off. Peace.